sheets don't short out, and you're eventually going to lay one sheet on top of the other, and maybe you're going to displace the sheets a little bit, and the sheets or were arranged in such a way, were cut out in such a way that they're not square or rectangles. They are square or rectangles with places where there is a flat lead coming out of the sheet at the beginning of the roll and the end of the roll. Is that sort of true, Wes? Go ahead.
Yeah, when you look at the hole on that roll, scotch tape, this hole was in the coil capacitor, so we could slide that coil capacitor on the carousels, or carousels. Now, what we did is we put that scotch tape on one side of the aluminium sheet and the other side of another aluminium sheet, so we had a double insulation between them. Then we roll those two sheets as a pancake, and that's how the coil capacitor was created. Now, we have had a niche for two ends from both sides to be exposed. So what we did is we bent, we fold each one of the sheets at the beginning at 90 degrees, having two ends exposed on the side. Then we roll coil capacitor on it, and we have had two other ends on the top. Back to you.
I have a question, Dick.
When I'm looking at picture 001 JPEG, and I see a roll of scotch tape in the upper left-hand corner of that picture, in the middle of the picture, I see a coil of wire wrapped on something that is white, and I see two blue pieces of tape holding the coil down. Are those turns of that coil with a center tap, is that wrapped on a capacitor, or is that simply wrapped on a white coil form? Over to you, Wes.
No, that coil is one of the output coils called pickup coil. If you look at the diagram, you see the horizontal carousels or caruses. Now, that coil that you see on that picture was the first successful experiment that we have made. That was first pickup coil that was slide on the top of caruses. Caruses went inside. It is winded on the piece of the plumbing pipe, which is made from the plastic. Then, at the diagram that I have sent you, we didn't use this coil at all. What we did is we wrap a pancake coil from two sheets of the aluminium, creating a capacitor. We did not use that coil. Back to you. For this representation on the drawing as a vertical rectangle, it's the coil capacitor. So we had a choice. Either use traditional pickup coil that is shown on 001, or use the capacitor coil that was experiment number two, let's say.
Okay. Picture 001 is a coil with a center tap, apparently wrapped on a innocent cylinder of some kind. Just a plastic form, I'm going to guess. Is that coil of 001 shown in the schematic diagram?
We start 2 weeks ago with this coil, exactly this coil concept. That was slide on the caruses. And we've got 2 watts approximately of the power consumption and 150 watts out. 160 watts out, actually. Then when I went to the lab, when we had the experimentation we did, we have made another experiment. The experiment was using, instead of this pickup coil, was using coil capacitor. Back to you.
John, I think you said you had a question.
Absolutely, Dick. I'm trying to keep this simple. Just think about it. We got a 3-inch wide piece of foil, say a couple of feet long, that's wrapped around in this coil. Now, at the top, on the same piece of foil, we have a light bulb. Let's say it's not 160 watts. Let's say it's 10 watts. How much circulating current do we need in that coil to give us 115 volts to light that at that amperage?
Because crosshatch lead number one is going to the left-hand side of bulb number two, and again crosshatch lead number one on the right-hand side of bulb number two are really shown to the right of the words capacitive coil. To the right, you've got a schematic that looks like a primary and secondary transformer, but the one in one is the exact same sheet. My goodness, to get voltage to appear across a sheet of material.
90,000 volts.
How many volts?
Approximately 19,000 volts. 90,000 volts.
In that construction.
90,000 volts. It turns out that John and I both own a Wimshurst machine. We've got a gut feel of how far 90,000 volts will arc through air.
Right, and didn't arc. Didn't arc. See, everything, the secret in here is on this drawing. We not make any secret. I can have this drawing available. It's not a big deal. So the thing is just to find out how it works. We know that it works.
John and I have got hands-on experience at 90,000 volts through air. Air has a dielectric strength of 30,000 volts per centimeter. Therefore, it will arc 3 centimeters, inch and a quarter or so. I am convinced that the layers of that capacitor between sheet number one and sheet number two, or between the various portions of sheet number one, I'm reasonably convinced there is not more than an inch of air spacing everywhere so that 90,000 volts would not be arcing over. And if between lead number one and lead number one is 90,000 volts, are we going to say that light bulb number two is experiencing 90,000 volts? Something doesn't sound right. Over to you, Wes.
And I agree with you.
If you tried to put 90,000 volts at any frequency across the incandescent filament of a light bulb, because a light bulb has a small amount of inert gas inside to control the rate at which the tungsten evaporates, I'm reasonably sure that all kinds of arcing and sparking would take place inside of that light bulb.
On the video, it was shown the ionization factor. It was also shown very much interesting experiment that show how the foil, before we went to the coil capacitor, we wrapped the foil around the caducee, just wrapped, leaving two ends exposed. Now, the sheet, John saw it on the video. When we connect the high voltage, the sheet was pulled like a magnet, by the magnet, towards the caducee. John?
Hold on now, we're jumping too many steps ahead. Let me back up for a minute.
Dick, let's stick with a simple diagnostics here.
Wes, we've got to go one step at a time. Try. I know you've got a lot of enthusiasm, but stop jumping 4 or 5 steps ahead when I don't yet understand the first step. Let me drop and I'll show you my problem. You just told us that across light bulb number two, from crosshatch number one to crosshatch number two, those two files coming out of sheet number one, across light bulb number two is 90,000 volts. I own a high voltage probe for an oscilloscope that's good for 30,000 volts. John owns one that's good for 40,000 volts. It's a great big tool. Looks like a lance in your hand. Inside of there, there's a pair of 1,000 megohm resistors allowing you to measure 30,000 volts. And you're claiming that between the two leads of light bulb number two, there was 90,000 volts. What in the world was the instrumentation used to measure that, and how many rooms did it fill up? I'm exaggerating a little bit. At 2XJN, K2RIW.
That is a very good question, and the answer for that question is estimate. We couldn't measure that. I have two probes, good for 40,000 volts, actually three of them, but two of them complete. I'm going to measure it, at least as much as I can at voltage and apply that. Find out how that caduceus works and how find out all of the information about it. Now, when you see the lead number one and number one, that light bulb was barely leading. Now, what was also funny is that you see two hands of IDAS holding these two strips and trying to find out how much spark we get from it. Remember, the long time ago, I have asked you about the cold current. The name is very much unpopular, but there is a number of videos, a number of materials, and I've seen it in my hands. You can have a light bulb lighting, you can touch them with your hands. The frequency is important. It's a skin effect. Enter Xia.
Yes, in my youth, a friend of mine built a Tesla coil. His was operating with a vacuum tube as the oscillator in the primary circuit. I forget the exact number, but maybe it was 200 kilohertz or some number like that. It made a nice gentle spark that would go 2 or 3 inches. You could put your hand in that spark, and it didn't feel very uncomfortable, because the 200 kilohertz means that the skin effect, all of the current is flowing across your skin. It didn't penetrate the body. You didn't feel it. If I kept my finger there close enough, long enough, I would feel some heat. But I have seen the effect where the frequency is high enough and the current is low enough. You can put your hand on it, and it's relatively safe. But now, if you're getting enough current to light the incandescent filament of a light bulb, and now you're putting your fingers across the two leads of that light bulb while the light bulb is lighting, now life's getting a little more complicated. I think you're saying that the person was able to do that, light the light bulb and touch at least one lead at a time. I'm almost comfortable with that. But if his fingers bridge the gap between the two leads of the light bulb while the light bulb is lighting, and if the estimated number is 90,000 volts, now that's pushing physics a little too far. I'm having trouble accepting that. Into XJN, K2RIW.
I have another view for you too, Dick, when you get a chance.
Yes, well, when we were dealing with that coil capacitor on it, he was trying to use one hand only. He got a shock a few times. You see it on the video. There are three sets of video. One is 1.5 minutes. I can deliver more. I have hundreds of them. Very short one. And there was a very high voltage on it, no doubt about it. The frequency that was delivered to the caduceus or caduceus was 16.8 of kilohertz. I'm going to have a very accurate evidence for you, but also I'm going to play with that particular caduceus. I have a copy of the caduceus by itself only. So I'm going to be able to measure, and this caduceus was exactly winded the way that the first experiment caduceus work. It was 2 weeks ago, I have sent you the video showing the first experiment when the 160 actually volt watt light bulb was working on it. It was a long one, and we spoke about it. Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, before we go a little bit further, John, you said you've got a picture you want me to see that's going to help clear this up. Go ahead, John, and tell me where to go to see the picture.
No, Dick, it's a verbal explanation. I think I found the problem with what we're dealing with. Stop looking at that capacitor as a capacitor. Look at it as an inductor. When he labels terminal 1 and 1 on the same piece of foil, he means that's connected at opposite ends. So there, now we have a length, not 3 inches, which is what the width of that is. So I know that doesn't satisfy even my requirements, but that now gives us a different aspect to look at. Do you understand what I'm speaking about?
I'm looking at the schematic, and please say it all one more time.
Certainly. Let's look at it this way. Terminal 1 on sheet number 1. It means sheet number 1 and there's one connection. The second number 1 connection should be at the bottom of the first sheet. So now we have a length of a coil that's wrapped around. He's showing it in the pictorial he has here as a 3-inch gap between the two connections. Not true. It's probably a couple of feet because it's at the other end of the coil, the inner part and the outer part, which is not even shown in the diagram on the right.
It's correct, John. I just show two ends of number 1 on the top just to for the people to understand. But actually, if you look on the right-hand side, let me jump. On the right-hand side, pancake coil that is shown as winded, just right-hand side in the middle, all the way to the right. That's what it shows. The end of one is in the middle, and the other end of one is on the outside. The end of two is in the middle, and the other one is outside.
But it's not showing the connections.
Right, it is not showing a connection, but it shows number 1 and number 2, which is the indication that we use that inner one for the connection and the outer one for the connection.
Okay, Dick, back to you. Clear as mud this drawing.
Well, I am touching on that there is many turns of sheet number 1 between the center of that coil of sheet number 1 and the outer connection point of sheet number 1, which is not shown in the center right-hand side. But those two connection points are both going to bulb number 2. So I can see how there is an inductive characteristic of these turns of this sheet of metal that's wound in this manner. Up till now, we've been calling that thing a capacitor. It's a lot more than a capacitor. It's a capacitor inductor wrapped up device. It's got inductance, it's got capacitance, and I'm reasonably sure that no matter, it's got a total of 4 leads, no matter which of the 2 leads you use at a time, or even using 4 leads at a time, we sweep it in frequency and measure reactance, resistance, coupling coefficient from primary to secondary, whatever you like. I know we're going to get a very complicated set of curves of whatever parameter we measure versus swept frequency, because it is not a pure inductor, it is not a pure capacitor, it's got a little bit of resistance, it's got a little bit of everything. But the only thing we've established for sure, let me drop. The only thing we've established for sure up till now is that it has a fairly well-controlled, reasonable, passive dielectric material, which is the scotch tape. And you'd be amazed how many times I've made capacitors out of scotch tape and pieces of copper foil in what I do at 1,000 megacycles over the last 5 years, and that's resulted in a number of and 10 of patent applications. It turns out a piece of scotch tape laid on one piece of copper foil and another piece of copper foil laid on top of it makes an extremely good 1,000 megacycle capacitor. It's got a very controlled capacitance. I can, by peeling it, I can change the capacitance. I can easily go from 20 picofarad down to nearly 0 picofarad just by peeling the darn thing. And all the way, it's got reasonably high Q, reasonably good control of inductance, as long as I make the sheets of copper wide enough. I can make the inductance of the leads as low as you like. I can make an extremely good capacitor. So scotch tape, I've got a warm, fuzzy feeling for scotch tape used as a dielectric material on copper foil. And I think these sheets are aluminum foil. And by the way, if they are aluminum foil, how did you make contact to them? Soldering to aluminum foil is a real tough problem.
We just wrap it. We took a piece of wire, we stripped, let's say, a quarter of an inch from the insulation, and we simply wrapped that aluminum foil around it. This, the thickness of the aluminum foil is exactly the thickness of the foil that is used for the RF shielding, or let's say for your chicken when you try to boil it.
So if I took the roll of Reynolds wrap from my wife's kitchen,
correct.
Alrighty. Soldering to that, if I wanted to, is a real tough problem. Wrapping it around a bare piece of copper wire could give me reasonably good contact, particularly if 90,000 volts is present. Wow. Milliwatts of applied signal at various frequencies from two signal generators applied to a structure of some kind results in 90,000 volts being applied across a light bulb number two. By the way, is light bulb number two a 110 volt light bulb? And if so, at how many watts? Is light bulb number one and light bulb number two rated on its glass? What number of watts is stamped, and are these 110 volt or 120 volt light bulbs? Over to you, Wes. Wait for the beep.
A little bit of correcting factors. At first, the two generators of milliwatts were utilized in ferrite yoke. In here, we have used a bipolar power supply that delivered us the frequency of 16.8 kilohertz. The power consumption was estimated and was actually measured about 3 watts. Now, the voltage that was delivered from that power supply generator then was connected to the flyback transformer. The flyback transformer is shown on the left-hand side, and it's being marked as a high-voltage transformer. From that transformer, we have had two diodes, and these two diodes were in reverse, as you see over there, and the capacitor across. Now from that, it goes to one leg of the carousels, but that's supposed to be a spark gap between the leg of the carousels and that structure, the two diodes and the capacitor. Do you follow so far?
A little bit yes, quite a bit no. In the schematic diagram I'm looking at, around those two back-to-back diodes connected to the high-voltage transformer, between the two diodes on the right-hand side of the two diodes is something that looks like a capacitor. The arrow says look at number C, crosshatch C. I presume that capacitor and the rolled-up foil capacitor on the right-hand side have nothing to do with each other. Give me a yes or no on that first.
That's correct. The capacitor is only between the two diodes, and then from that connection, that one wire goes to one leg of the carousels. But between that capacitor, which is the black two diodes and the capacitor, and the one leg of the carousel, supposed to be the spark gap. Also, another spark gap supposed to be present between light bulb number one at the bottom on the right-hand side, and the horizontal strip. Those were two spark gaps that are supposed to be there. I made that schematic after, 24 hours of not sleeping and still being in the lab. Back to you.
When I look at 0.002 JPEG, I see a black pair of objects up top, I see a yellow object with some red tape in the middle, and I see the coil of wire we were discussing before of 001. I presume the yellow object with some red tape on it and some wrapped copper wires, that is the caduceus, I'm assuming. That caduceus, is the yellow portion of that caduceus a insulating material? What is that yellow material? Is that winding or is that just a coil form? Over to you, Wes.
It's a coil form. On the top you see two ferrites, huge ones. We didn't use this ferrite in the experiment, in that particular experiment. We use a very small rod of ferrite, the diameter about 1/4 inch, and long between two cross sections of the caduceus. Now the caduceus that you see in here is a plastic piece of pipe wrapped with the electrical foil, and then you see the wire that is made from five pieces of the copper wire all together to increase the thickness. Now this particular one was made exactly according to the theory. The regular theory about the caduceus coil did not work, but I include that as the representation of how the caduceus is being wound. Back to you.
Question.
Go ahead, John.
Dick, what do you estimate the breakdown voltage of that tape is? I think it's under 6,000. Because if you notice, foil number two is grounded.
Yeah, I know where you're going there. And could that scotch tape, no matter how it's used, on any one layer of the scotch tape experience, where would it arc over? I'd be amazed if it can tolerate more than 2,000 or 3,000 volts.
Correct. That was the first one that we wanted. And we find out that we have a short, because this foil, that electrical yellow tape, and the pipe didn't hold the voltage. So what we did next, so when we put the pickup coil, the one that is at the bottom, that was, let's say we don't use the capacitive coil, but we use just this pickup coil, let me jump. So when we use, when we put that pickup coil that is on the bottom, and we slide it on the caduceus, we had a spark jumping. So what we did then is we changed the caduceus. I have a pictures of the caduceus that I'm going to send also to you and John, which use the foam, like an insulation foam for the pipes. When you have a copper pipe and you want to insulate them thermally, we put that on the pickup coil, and then on the top of the pickup coil we put the electrical tape, and then we put that scotch tape and electrical tape again. Actually, I have a working coil on my desk right now. Back to you.
In picture number two, the yellow caduceus coil has these multi-leads of copper, and it's wrapped If I start at the bottom, left-hand side, and I trace one of those wire things, I see it wrap around 1 1/4 times clockwise, and the other end wraps 1 1/4 turns counterclockwise. They crisscross at the bottom, they crisscross at the top. There's a total of 2 crisscrosses. I guess it's just only a schematic diagram, but the schematic diagram shows more than 3 crisscrosses.
Correct. The one on the yellow was the first one that we wanted, and we checked it didn't work. We made exact copy of the coil. So I have a coil on my desk. There are a few copies of that coil. And this one has 1, 2, 3 cross sections. Back to you.
Okay, the schematic diagram of that caduceus winding, I'm going to call it, shows all of the caduceus winding as a dotted turn. A dotted turn would mean it's all on the back side of the coil form and none of it's on the front side. In reality, some of that should be non-dotted and some of it should be dotted, depending on the particular portion of the wire being on the front side or the back side of that caduceus coil. A minor error, but that's another cause of confusion here.
Correct, it is correct. It should be this way. But what I need from you is just to have a time, look at the at what you have over there. I can send you the links to the particular play the links when you're going to see a caduceus exactly show, the one that is working, exactly show from all of the sides. It's a video, there are also pictures of it, there are accurate dimensions of it, everything is there.
Let's go a little bit slow now so I can try to understand the schematic diagram. The schematic diagram shows something called capacitor coil. In that diagram, it is a rectangular object with the major dimension up and down. The caduceus coil appears to be at right angles to it. Is the caduceus coil laying directly on top of the capacitor? Over to you, Wes.
On the schematic diagram, the horizontal rectangle with this winding that you say it's on the, so should be some dotted, some not dotted, that's the caduceus coil. The vertical rectangle is the coil capacitor. The pickup coil from 002 is not shown there. We didn't use at this particular experiment the pickup coil. Do you follow so far?
Maybe yes, maybe no. In that schematic diagram, it looks like the caduceus coil is at right angles to the capacitor coil.
Correct.
And it looks like the caduceus coil is lying on top of the capacitor coil, maybe in direct physical contact with it.
Negative, Dick. I can give you a description on that.
Go ahead, John.
If you look at the capacitor coil in the middle right-hand side, that is wrapped as a coil, only it has a large diameter in the center. So it is actually a concentric coil that slides over the caduceus.
Wow. So that schematic diagram where I see the capacitor coil vertical, I see the caduceus coil horizontal, one could easily come to the conclusion that one is lying on top of the other. Which goes inside of which, John?
The caduceus coil is in the center. The capacitive coil is slid on that cylinder, and it is tuned to those two dots, which look like soldered points. They're not. They're just indicating where the coil goes, the capacitor coil goes.
Also, that horizontal strip of foil that is slid between the caduceus and the capacitive coil is exactly at length between these two dots representing the cross sections. And also that piece of the longitudinal strip is represented at the bottom of the schematic as a U shape. It shows exactly the dimension. The width of that is 1/4 of the diameter of the caduceus, and the length of it is exactly between 2 points of the cross section of the caduceus.
That's an inferior circumferential piece of foil.
Wow. The two wires coming out of the drive circuit. Why is there a funny looking bump in the right hand wire?
Everybody was tired. 6 people. Not sleeping. That was the last day. With the travel, that was 48 hours of not being in a bed. So he was just drawing, I was drawing the whole schematic. Now, Idas was simply showing the trigger coil and the drive one, which is kind of the automatic adjustment device that could be there, but we didn't have that when we were experimenting with it. He said, this is going to be my next device. So you can simply forget about the trigger coil. But we forgot to add in here, inside the caduceus, there was 1/4 inch thickness ferrite rod at the length between the two cross section. It was a little bit longer, but still works. My question to you is, at first, the device did not work with it, even slight, the smallest possible ferrite inside did not work. The device started to work only if there was any kind of ferrite that was inside. Could that be that this ferrite reacted as a relay? If one end of the ferrite is on one cross section on the left hand side of the caduceus winding, and the other one is on the right point of the cross section, when the peak shows on the left hand side cross section, then the domains in the ferrite start to switch, but before they were able to switch to the other end of the ferrite rod, there was another impulse that came in from another peak on the right hand side. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think I understand, and I think I don't have an answer. What do you think, John?
I know I don't have an answer, Dick. I'm just trying to understand and format this in my mind. It's just so strange that I'm starting to get the concept of what this thing really looks like. But as far as measurements are concerned, I still have trouble with those voltages that he's telling me they got.
We got Donald in center reach. Into LDY, go right ahead, Don.
Yeah, I had trouble finding my SMA adapter earlier. My question earlier, what I was trying to throw in there was, when he originally said 100-watt light bulb at 3 watts or something, I was just curious as to, you know, would it react differently if you had like a 5-watt light bulb, you know, with 3 watts into it? You know, the filament is going to glow brighter. It's going to be at a higher resistance, and also certain filaments, tungsten filaments, are wound, and you have also a tungsten filament that isn't wound, you know, that's straight, you know. And how would that react in, you know, in reference to, like, your measurements? Over.
Hey, you're doing a good job of getting into the Eastern End machine, 147.375. That antenna you're using is a hell of a lot better. And I can hear you on the input of 147.975. What are you using as an antenna now? How high up is it? And how many watts are you putting into that, Don, on a quick break? Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the other radio, I was using a different radio, and it had a long rubber duck on it, you know, very long rubber duck, like 15 inches, and it was 5 watts, handheld. This antenna is, it's about a 4-foot long diamond antenna that's just on the roof of the house, you know, not too much higher than the roof. It's a dual band antenna, and the radio here now is only running like a couple of watts, so it's only running 2 watts into the other antenna. So I guess it's a big difference.
Boy, that makes a big difference. A couple of watts into a real antenna on the roof is probably 15 decibels stronger than the 5-watt handy-talkie into its rubber duck down at the ground level or whatever. Now, you're asking an interesting question, Don, and that is, have these guys tried big bulbs, small bulbs, high-voltage bulbs, low-voltage bulbs, and whatever? I don't think they've gone that far yet, but different kinds of filaments, different voltages, would they still see the same thing? I mean, if a 150-watt bulb, for instance, lights at full brilliance, it'd be interesting to ask the question, if I put in a 50-watt bulb in that exact same location, 120-volt, 50-watt bulb, would it burn up? Or if I put a 500-watt bulb, would it glow dimly?
You see on the video of mine that one of the experiments was provided to the right lower-hand side, a light bulb burned up in front of you.
So I think you're saying, let me drop. When you use a light bulb of lower amount of wattage than you think the circuit was producing, the light bulb would burn up. So in other words, you really are producing that power, it really would burn up a light bulb.
Right.
So I think that's part of the answer that Don is looking for. If we zoom back for a minute here, Wes, and recognize that up till now the measurements have led you to believe.
I guess, what I was trying to say is that, you know, if you're only running 3 watts into a 100-watt bulb, the filament is going to just barely glow, if anything. I don't even think you would be able to see it glow if you were running 3 watts into a 100-watt bulb. You wouldn't see anything. In my mind, anyway.
Explain over unity to a thing.
I guess that we're not going to get a beep. Don, you're using good common sense. And this group of people in Europe and Wesley and a group of people in the United States have been doing some experiments for a number of years. They believe under certain conditions you can put a certain amount of power into a, let's call it, circuit, and you get greater power output than you put in. At first we all say, that can't possibly be, it's violation of conservation of energy, it's a almost kind of perpetual motion, although it's not. It's greater than unity in the more power out than you put in. At first we're all very skeptical. Let me drop. And as Carl Sagan and other people have said, an extraordinary claim requires extraordinary evidence. And so these guys are in the process of gathering the evidence to find out what is happening. And if I zoom back for a minute, Wes, I am sure a number of people have asked the question, okay, the evidence up till now is showing a greater than unity, more power output than input. And one of the first questions a person would ask after they see the instrumentation, accept the instrumentation, and at least begin to say, I think I'm beginning to believe maybe this is really taking place, the next very next question a person in that circumstance would ask is, what do you believe is the causative agent of greater than unity continuous power transfer? Has anyone explained, has anyone come up with words or theory or whatever to try to explain what is allowing this to take place, because it's a considerable break with normal tradition? N2XJN, K2RIW.
N2XJN. Okay. We have two technologies that appears to be working. One is based on the ferrite yoke from the old TV from 60s. We have another technology that was 2 weeks before this one. Everything is barely new. The technology is based on the Tesla. Now, about 1.5 years ago, actually 2 years ago, there was the beginning of the year. I was looking at the material for the TechNet, trying to say something. My English was poor at that time. Let me jump. And I started to look at the material available, and I found a video from TK. This guy was using one impulse only, not even the power, one impulse only, and he was showing number of experiments. First, for the president of his country, that was 3 kilowatts of power from one impulse only, and then worked without any power delivered at all. And then 5 kilowatts, and then 100 kilowatts and 50 kilowatts in between. When he went to 100 kilowatts of power driven from 9-volt battery, one impulse only, let me drop, then the company called Westel, originated in Switzerland, with the headquarters, as I remember, in Germany and the Switzerland, Germany, and Austria, decided to invest huge amount of money into the investigation of that. So they went to Turkey, they signed a contract with TK for €500 million. They put the device for three-phase on the glass table. Everything is shown there. And he built the device. They filmed everything. And the end of it, they never claimed that the device doesn't work. But they didn't give him the money. So my assumption would be, for some reason, the contract was constructed based on the Austrian law, and based on that law, you have to be in that country, have at least a certain amount of money in order to fight for your rights. TK is a poor man. Let me drop. So then I said to myself, I gotta see it. So I went to TK, and I've seen the device that was specially made for me. It was probably 8 hours that took them to make it. Now, they didn't want us to reveal all of the details, but I filmed that, and I was able to see that they use one single input to start the device. The device was working for 30 minutes in front of my eyes. There was no way that the battery was hidden there, or if it was, there was probably very, very small battery, couldn't last. For 200 watts, two light bulbs, 100 watts each one, for 30 minutes. Then I had to go to the flight, because I didn't have much more time. Then I went back, and I said to TK, what you gonna do with it? You cannot sell it. Once the first device is on the market, everybody knows how it works. He said, I'm gonna give it to the people. But after the trip, he's very, very sick. I went sick as well. I don't want to explain more of the details in here. I was able to save myself. Kariel ate only 10% of the food that I have ate. Now, I was trying to investigate his concept, and then I get across a group of people. One of them is from England. The other one is from another country. And that is me. We start to investigate a concept, and then one of the gentlemen has made a device, and we tried it when we talked to each other. And I said, listen, you got to add another spark up, and you got another spark up. And that was the spark up from the output coil that you see on 002. Now, Arunas from England, he said, you got to add capacitor across and leave one end of the pickup coil that has three ends open as like an antenna.
Got like 5 minutes, Wes.
Okay, and to XGM. Now, we tried with 60 watts first. It starts to work. Then we start, we put 160 watts, it works. Then we put 600 watts, it works. That's the basic short. We went to 1 kilowatt. Then 2 weeks later, there was another concept of Tiger. That guy is from Kazakhstan. He was experimenting with it. And we were able to get another result. Two small generators, shows on the video, so you can see that, delivering milliwatts, and without the spark, 150 watts light bulb lighting, with the spark in the horizontal U section, 1 kilowatt of power. And I stay on my word, but you don't have to believe it. To it. Now, do I have it in my house? Guys, I don't have to ask Bernie what he has in his house, gold or whatsoever, so he has no right to ask me what I have in my house. Simple like that. I have a coil. Yes, I have a coil. Exactly the coil that was used in this experiment, that I can say. And I'm going to investigate it further. And eventually present it to you, Dick, and to John, and to Xia.
Did TK, with his dealings with Westel, when he went to Austria, and was about to sign a contract with some significant number of euros, were going to change hands, did TK give Westel the device? Did he give Westel a working model, a schematic diagram, a description? Does Westel have it? I have the impression that Westel did not pay. Did Westel get it for free, or does Westel not have it? Over to you, Wesley, K2RIW.
TK never went to Austria. They got a contract with him, and they established a place of the experimentation in Turkey. So everything was done in Turkey. And in Turkey, he asked for the money. They were filming every step of TK. I'm pretty much sure that they have everything what they need. And there's plenty of evidence, even though that did not allow him to film it, he managed to film that. So link I can give you, so you can see it by yourself. Now, as I say, one single impulse, 9-volt battery, and a device of 100 kilowatts of power work by itself. I've seen the device on my own eyes. I hold it in my own hand. I touch it. I smell it. 200 watts from one single impulse. He didn't use 9-volt battery. He used the power, the charger, battery charger, giving an impulse of 1 second and 2 amps.
Yes, I did see one of the YouTube videos where TK is holding a very large plastic box with a lot of circuitry inside.
The aquarium. The aquarium was 5 kilowatts of power. Now, he put a lot of junk inside so that people do not know how it works. So my belief is that we are in the verge of finding how to loop the excess energy to the source so the device would work without any external power supplies. And to exit.
Now, it's not clear to me, Wesley. I'm asking your belief now. Do you believe Westel, by way of the meeting in Turkey? Does Westel have TK's design?
They have.
In other words, they tricked TK into giving up the design without paying for it. In other words, you believe Westel has TK's complete design, enough information to produce it for themselves. Is that what you're saying?
From the legal point standpoint, I can say I believe that they have all the secrets of TK because there was no way of TK to hide it.
It sounds like TK needed a good attorney, didn't he? And it sounds like they may have taken advantage of him.
Oh, not only them. There was a Turk who signed a contract with him for 50% future rights to future profits in order to fund the money for his international patent application. Now, here's the point. The patent application was filed 2 years ago. Soon, TK is going to get the denial because there are no patents for all their Unity devices. But if there is a number of replicants that could replicate his device based on him voluntarily giving information, then he does not need any proof more than 100,000 of the replicants on it. Simple like that. That was my idea. I said it to TK. He agreed with me. Now waiting to do what he promised to do. He promised in front of the camera, and I have it on the camera, I'm going to give it to the people. And John, go upstairs.